unser Podcast für Menschen, die sich täglich mit unseren Daten beschäftigen.
Herzlich willkommen zu unserem Podcast Datengeflüster, dem Podcast, bei dem wir uns mit Daten und alles rundherum beschäftigen. Mein Name ist Christoph Bauer, bin bei der Firma NetApp in Österreich und bin Co-Host dieses Podcasts.
Danke, Christoph. Mein Name Andreas Pulker, tätig für die Quorum-Distribution und ich bin der andere Co-Host unseres gemeinsamen Podcasts. Wir starten heute auf Deutsch und switchen dann auf Englisch, denn wir haben heute einen sehr speziellen Gast, den Sebastian Beck von der Healthion. Er hat als Cybersecurity Consultant für internationale Organisationen mit meistens 3 bis 4 Buchstaben gearbeitet, die man meistens aus Hollywood-Actionfilmen kennt. So Namen wie FBI, NSA, NATO. Und er hat sie dabei unterstützt, Infiltrationen auf nationaler Ebene durchzuführen. Bei Healthion beschäftigt er sich damit, wie sich die AI auf die Cyber-Kill-Chain, also die Infiltration, auf den tatsächlichen Cyberangriff auf Unternehmen und Nationen auswirkt. Ja, bis zur NetApp Partner Academy war mir und ich glaube auch uns die Healthion noch kein Begriff. Aber nach der beeindruckenden Bühnenshow, die der Sebastian dort geliefert hat, hat der Christoph noch gemeint, den will ich im Podcast haben. Und so sitzen wir heute da. Bevor wir jedoch zu dir kommen, Sebastian, haben wir noch einen spontanen Gast, den Manuel Autzinger von der DigiSolutions. Ihr seid ein relativ neuer Partner im österreichischen NetApp-Ökosystem, aber schon seit längerer Zeit ein Healthion-Partner und das als einziger Partner in der Dachregion. Manuel, beginn dir mal kurz vorzustellen.
Ja, vielen lieben Dank und vor allem auch danke mal für die Einladung, dass wir auch Teil eures Podcasts sein dürfen. Vielleicht kurz zu mir, Manuel Autzinger mein Name, bin jetzt seit ungefähr einem halben, dreiviertel Jahr bei der Firma DigiSolutions mit dabei. DigiSolutions aus österreichischer Sicht ja ein absoluter Newcomer am IT-Markt dahinter, das heißt die Gründung der DigiSolutions Austria GmbH ist im April 2025 erfolgt. Wir sind auch aktuell noch eine klein, fein, übersichtlicher österreichischer IT-Dienstleister mit eigentlich einem Schwerpunkt auf Cybersecurity Services, aber natürlich auch aus der Vergangenheit und auch aus unseren verbundenen Unternehmen heraus. Auch viel in Infrastrukturprojekten unterwegs, natürlich auch stark mit NetApp unterwegs, wenn es in Richtung Storage-Projekte geht, auch in Österreich das ein oder andere große Projekt bereits umgesetzt in der Vergangenheit. Und ja, wie gesagt, freue mich, dass ich hier sein darf und auch die DigiSolutions ein wenig vorstellen darf. Ich habe kurz gesagt, Österreich relativ neu. Die DigiSolutions per se mit Headquarter in Deutschland gibt es ja schon seit knapp 30 Jahren am Markt. Wir sind aktuell weltweit gesehen rund 200 Mitarbeiter, teils in Deutschland, teils in Dubai beheimatet, auch ein kleiner Part in Südafrika. Kommt eher aus der Ecke unseres Owners, unseres CEOs, der ist gebürtiger Südafrikaner und dem ist es natürlich auch ein Anliegen, in seiner Heimat auch die europäische Technologie mit zu integrieren. Aber nicht nur dorthin zu verkaufen, sondern auch wirklich mit Leuten vor Ort zu sein, um hier wirklich auch die Digitalisierung am afrikanischen Kontinent auch mit hochzutreiben. Das ist eines seiner Herzensprojekte, neben natürlich auch dem deutschsprachigen Raum, den wir jetzt auch noch weiter angehen, weiter aufbauen und weiter ausbauen. DigiSolutions gerade in einem sehr starken Wachstumskurs auch, vor allem hier im deutschsprachigen Raum, allein im heurigen Jahr bereits rund 10 Mitarbeiter noch zusätzlich mit aufgenommen. Und ja, so probieren wir jetzt unsere Themen am Markt zu platzieren und natürlich auch gemeinsam erfolgreich zu sein.
Danke dir und gleich kurz nachgefasst, damit man eine Vorstellung und auch die Brücke jetzt zur Healthion. Wie kommt ihr zur Healthion? Was habt ihr schon gemacht miteinander und wie ist da der Kontext und Connex?
Das ist eigentlich eine relativ spannende Geschichte dahinter. Ich habe sie kurz erwähnt, DigiSolutions ja auch seit 3-4 Jahren einen größeren Standort in Dubai. Und was ich bis dato in meiner 20-jährigen IT-Karriere so nicht mit oder nicht ganz so gelebt oder gefühlt mitbekommen habe, ist ja das Thema, dass im hochregulierten Europa eigentlich gewisse Technologien sehr lange brauchen, bis sie eine gewisse Marktreife auch erlangt haben, dass sie in Europa auch Fuß fassen können, beziehungsweise auch der gesamthaften Regulatorik entsprechen. Und so wählen halt einige Hersteller den Weg auch über den asiatischen Raum, über den arabischen Raum in Richtung Europa zu gehen. Und da durften wir vor 2 bis 3 Jahren die Halcyon bereits schon kennenlernen dahinter. Und die Kollegen in Dubai haben auch das ein oder andere Projekt schon vor 1 bis 2 Jahren mit den Kollegen der Halcyon umgesetzt. Eine extrem coole Technologie, eine Anti-Ransomware-Technologie, die es dann Gott sei Dank auch geschafft hat, den Sprung in Richtung Europa zu machen, zu wagen. Und ja, so sind wir im Endeffekt eben über die Kollegen aus Dubai mit der Technologie von Halcyon in Berührung gekommen und haben gesagt, sobald das möglich ist, wollen wir das auch in Europa mit auf den Markt bringen. Und das Schöne an Halcyon bzw. an der Halcyon-Technologie ist ja auch, es gibt aktuell nichts Vergleichbares am Markt im Schutz gegen Ransomware oder auch im Bereich der Erhöhung der Resilience, auch schön in Richtung Infrastruktur und NetApp gibt es da eine Story dazu, wo wir gerne nochmal drüber sprechen können. Und ja, wir sind dann als DigiSolutions Dach-Organisation auch der erste MSSP-Partner von Halcyon im deutschsprachigen Raum geworden und ja, erzählen jedem gerne die Story, der es hören möchte. Und wie gesagt, ich glaube, man hört es vielleicht auch ein wenig raus. Ich bin schwer begeistert von der Technologie. Es gibt nichts Vergleichbares aktuell am Markt, aber Sebastian wird sicherlich das ein oder andere noch dazu sagen dann auch.
Ja, danke dir, Manuel. Die Halcyon kreist über Europa und ist jetzt gelandet. So, der Eagle landed in Europe. Sebastian, your introduction.
So yeah, Halcyon is actually quite new in Dach. We're only in our second quarter. So I've been here now for just over a quarter. And that counts for most of our team, right? So we kind of hit the ground running, quickly set up like a partner network in Austria, Switzerland, and Germany. And from that on, you know, it took off. And clearly also why? Because this is filling a gap that's currently existent and nobody has a solution for. Right? So if you specifically look at ransomware, there's a few approaches to that. The first one is obviously try to prevent it as good as possible. That's why you have, you know, the whole Christmas tree of solutions and your EDRs and XDRs. But the reality is that every successful ransomware attack has evaded those solutions. The reality is also that over the last 3 years, this whole industry grew by 104% year on year. And so it's not in decline. We don't have it under control. So, and you see very specific examples, right? I think Jaguar Land Rover was one of the big ones that was very recently. It wasn't because they didn't have their stuff under control. They had everything and they were still hit. Right? So how's that possible? Right? So there's a gap between what if your prevention fails and then what? Because the only answer is, probably rightfully so, is that we need to recover from backups. Right? So that's why you invest in those solutions as well. But there's no middle ground. So, and this is where Halcyon comes in. It's the middle ground plugging that gap, giving you the additional second layer that's incredibly effective against ransomware attacks. And people are seeing it's easy to implement. It's not expensive. And it's also very quick to implement.
Before we dive into Halcyon a bit more, we would like to get to know you a bit better. I think it is correct to say about you that you used to be on the bad side of cybersecurity. You consulted organizations on infiltration on nation-level attacks. We're talking about organizations like NATO, NSA, FBI. Depending on the side you're on, this could also be called ethical hacking. So these organizations used to call you and ask you for help. So how does this work exactly?
Yeah, so maybe some context around it, right? So I've been in the cyberspace for over 30 years now. And during that, you know, whole period of time, I've seen many sides of it. I wouldn't call myself an ethical hacker. There's a very specific term for somebody that does ethical work. I was a nation state offensive engineer, as you would call it, in other words, a nation state hacker. So I was part of nation state's group doing infiltrations into you know, other countries, and not necessarily ethical, because that's all debate by itself, right? So if I would infiltrate a network in China, would that be ethical? Well, it depends. If you ask China, they would say no, right? So this is a very difficult topic, because when I say China or Russia or Iran or Syria or whatever, you know, the consensus is like, okay, we get that. But when I say like, hey, I'm Dutch from origin, I did an infiltration in Germany, what's the answer then? Right? And the reality of things is this happens continuously from all over, you know, from Germany to France, from France to England, from England to whoever. It's one spider web where everybody tries to get as close as possible to intelligence. And there's people that do that. And I was part of that group of people.
Okay. So they called you, these organizations, these nations called you, we need to get into those systems, can you help us? What do you do, or what did you do to get into this kind of situation?
Right, yeah. So how that started was actually, you know, stemming from my youth, where I would say I was the curious adolescent, the teenager that was really interested in how does the internet work, how does an e-banking system work, and what can I do with it? And that's sort of how it started and spun off. In my very early 20s, that skill set was recognized by the employer I was working at, which then sort of parked me at the, you know, 3- and 4-letter organizations from time to time to do assignments. And as you grow into that, clearance levels become a thing. So you just don't drop into like super sketchy stuff. That's not how it works. You need to work yourself up, A, in the ranks, and B, you really need to have security clearance, because you get exposed to very, very sensitive material. Yeah, and that's a progression for of like 25 years.
Okay. And then you used to work for multiple security companies where you also did consultancy.
So I've worked at several, let's call them vendors for now. Like, for example, I did a startup called PointSec that was acquired by Checkpoint. I stayed with Checkpoint for a while, then moved into McAfee, was there for 11 years, then moved to Cyber Reason. And from Cyber Reason, you know, when I moved to Switzerland, I stuck with Checkpoint again for a period. But during that whole time, there were just moments that I wasn't available to these organizations, and with approval was sort of tasked out to these particular organizations. Yeah.
So when you target an organization or a nation, we talk about the cyber kill chain. So specific steps that you take for reconnaissance, for infiltrating, and for attacking. Can you describe a little bit the cyber kill chain, and maybe also you have some kind of examples, not naming anything or anyone, but that we can have a little bit more of a better imagination?
Yeah, sure. So the kill chain is a term deposed by Lockheed Martin, and it basically depicts what an attack look like, what stage it's going through. And these are in a certain order, and the order is non-negotiable, right? So let me give you a very extreme example. In the military, let's say that you as a fighter pilot with bombs on board get a target assigned. You don't just take off with the plane and go fly, because the first question is where to, where's the target, and all of that good stuff. So you need to do preparation, right? So you need to do research on, is there air defense? For example, am I risking being shot? Stuff like that. What's the target like? How big of a bomb? You know, there's a whole lot that comes to it. So also with cyber attacks in any shape or form, there's an order of operation that you need to adhere to be successful, right? So, and that starts with the recon phase, the reconnaissance phase. I also refer to as OSINT, in some cases, open source intelligence. But in case of nation state, it's really not open source intelligence, obviously, but it's the recon phase where we basically profile, like, what is the target or the assignment look like? Or where do they reside? What does their exposure look like in terms of their digital footprint? What's their supply chain, competitors, partners? Who works within this organization? And then you map it from top to bottom. who are they married to? Who are their kids? To which football club did he go? What are their interpersonal relations? LinkedIn, Instagram, you name it, every social profile. And you build up, you know, the vision of that particular target and object. And it goes really, really deep to definitely a scary level deep.
Mm. What kind of tools do you use there? Is it just like basic Google search or?
No, first of all, there's definitely no Google in there because Google is a commercial company. It leaves an incredible amount of footprints for these activities. There are specific tools developed depending on the group that you're working with or for. They have their own. So yeah, this is pretty much not publicly available. You can find a lot publicly though. That's the other thing, obviously, because everybody has an Instagram profile or their TikTok or their YouTube. So that's a rich source of information. But yeah, typically these tools that are being used are not publicly available, but do not underestimate the skills of the person that's doing this itself. There's a lot you can do with, you know.
And before AI, how long did it take you to have this kind of map?
Right. Yeah, that's a good question because depending on the target and what the assignment is, right, it varies, right? If it's a quickie, then, you know, it looks very different than, for example, naming a project Stuxnet, for example, which was a campaign that took years and years and years, right? So you can imagine that the research that went into that and the reconnaissance that went into it is A, continuous, never stops, and B, is massive, right? So, but typically for an assignment, it would vary between some days, depending on what information was already available, to sometimes weeks or months or even years, right? So things are in parallel. That was before AI, that's correct. But yeah, nowadays that looks a bit different.
Mm. I think we will come to this point later, or we can talk about it now also, because this is actually one very big proposition of Halcyon, right? To be cyber resilient in the age of AI.
Yeah, definitely. So if I just move back to the kill chain, for example, right, we just spoke about the reconnaissance phase. What comes after that, once you've done that, right? So we go to what we call the weaponization phase. So now, based on the intelligence we have, us understanding what the target looks like, we also understand what kind of weapon do we need. Is it a zero day that we need to develop? Are there CVs, vulnerabilities available on, you know, the surface we want to get into? Yes or no? That makes our life a lot easier. Sometimes it's really simple things like putting a simple exploit on a USB stick and throw a couple of hundred around in a parking lot. I still find this funny.
This still works.
So after years of security awareness training for all those people, yeah, roughly 60% plugs it in somewhere.
60.
So we haven't learned. But so that's the weaponization phase, right? And if you look at that, depending on how difficult it would be to get into a target, this would be something off the shelf. So, you know, and you might need to customize a few days to, if you need to engineer zero-day exploits, it could be weeks, months, some cases even, you know, years. If it's a moving environment, you need to adapt continuously. So, you know, these two stages are all before it hits the target, right? Victim doesn't see this unless you have very deep tentacles into the dark web, you know, or counter threat intelligence into the nation state that might be researching you. So usually you don't spot a lot of this. So after that stage, that's the first moment where actually something hits you, right? There's you as the victim. So they bring something into your environment in whatever way is possible. And this is the potential moment that your organization could spot it, actually see it. Now, the first two phases, like I mentioned, you know, days to weeks to sometimes years, that's a whole different story nowadays, right? And I've given some examples in the last few years of things I actually worked on and I was in, encountering and so on. And then a couple of weeks ago, everybody was like speaking about this new Mythos thing from Anthropic. And you see the cybersecurity community being like, wow, ooh, this has some implications. But this has been around for years. first time I was in contact with this was in 2018, right? So we're in 2026. It's been around for 8 years at least. Mm-hmm.
Can you explain a little bit what Mythos, quick terms.
So in quick terms, what Mythos does is basically looking at applications or servers, and it's deciphering like what are the potential vulnerabilities, looking into that, and then also has capabilities of exploiting that, right? Which is the reconnaissance phase plus the weaponization phase. And this moved from days, years, months, sometimes years, to eventually minutes and hours, right? And this means something. It's a big shift for the cybersecurity world, especially for the defense organizations, because suddenly where we used to have time, where, you know, we have people working in a SOC, doing triage, being able to process what's going on, now something is moving at super speed. Game over, right? So this is a big shift. It means something. We need to adapt very quickly. Now, and particularly Mythos is obviously a product from a commercial company. There's a very different thing than a nation state or a deep state group having developed this kind of thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's two whole different categories.
So before it, the hackers needed to analyze the code, find some weaknesses there, some vulnerabilities, then create the weapon and then use it. And now with Mythos, this is AI-based, so the detection of these vulnerabilities is way, way faster, and also the weaponization phase is faster now.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. And not necessarily only Mythos, right? This, you know, this is, it's a product clearly from Anthropic, but there are so many variants of this that are floating around being used by people that you don't want to meet in a dark back alley. Yeah, it has impact. It is also very worrying. I worry about this for quite a long time already. The first time I was hit with it and I needed to do, you know, an incident response on something where, you know, I had a counter hack assignment. And we found this. I was so impressed and also realized like, wow, this whole skill set that I have, that, you know, I was one of the really, really, really good guys in this field. Suddenly it doesn't mean that much anymore. But this is also a thing, right? If suddenly we move from an elite kind of capability to available for masses, that means something, and that is very dangerous. Yeah.
Okay, so the weaponization phase, to find the vulnerabilities, to get the weapon ready, this phase is also shortened drastically, and the tools for weaponization are made available to a broader audience with the help of AI. So there used to be a time buffer from vulnerability to an exploit actively being used in the wild, and this time buffer is now more or less non-existent anymore.
Yeah, it's unrealistic acceleration of things.
And what happens after the weaponization?
Well, obviously, then you go to infiltration. Now, we developed something that was, you know, made to size, made to fit for the particular organization or your target. You need to introduce it within the target's environment. And from that moment on, several things start to happen, right? So what mostly happens once you've got an exploit in, a C2 channel or a CNC channel is being built up. So the command and control channel. This is like ET phone home to hacker home base. And from that moment on, the hacker can start his operation. What needs to happen in the network, how that particular infiltration needs to progress. So that also gave the SOC time to analyze, right? And especially if you're talking about nation state, seldomly it's the case that a nation state attack moves very quickly and is noisy. Because we try not to create noise. We don't want an international incident. So you take it slow, plan it very carefully, and that gives you time. So now the next stage of AI acceleration is autonomous attacks. And so if you have an AI attack that has its mission instructions inside it, knows how to progress with that within a network, there's no longer a C2 or the command and control channel that's being instructed, you know, by the hacker itself. It's autonomous. Then we see a big change, and this is a real problem. So if you look at threat statistics, especially the threat reports that are published, like quarterly or yearly by several of the leading organs, you see that there's a progression in the speed of attacks. Right, in Q1 2025, it was mentioned in several reports that from moment of infiltration to being done with a mission was 54 seconds. So if we look at the architecture of a SOC, so I mean the bolts and the wheels, right? So we take a log file from an endpoint, we collect it, we normalize it, we aggregate it, put it in a data lake, put a seam on top, run your use cases. That sequence of events takes way more than 54 seconds. And then you have an alert in a dashboard and a human needs to decide what to do with it. So that's a game over scenario. So the whole industry needs to adapt really quickly, really fast. Start today.
And you said now 45 seconds. How long did it take before the completely autonomous attack or CNC channel?
Yeah, it depends a little bit, but we're not talking about minutes. Absolutely not, right? So at best, I would say this was an hour's game before, but most likely much more days, two weeks even.
To really get the feel for the whole environment and
to
know what's going on.
Yeah, but many infiltrations are not necessarily, with the intention of doing something inside that network and getting it done. Many infiltrations are there just to be infiltrated, to have a tap into information, it's an intelligence feed.
Okay. So this is really also drastically reducing.
It is. So at the moment, right, these technologies that are there, 100%, are not in the hands of the masses, right? So if you look at hackers, it's a pyramid of power, right? So the elite are in the top. And then it widens out at the base, which are the script kiddies, and then everything in between, right? So if these kind of technologies, which is going to happen for sure, are flowing down in the pyramid, the danger becomes bigger. Right? If every day cyber criminals get their hands on this kind of stuff, it becomes very, very challenging. And especially if you look at what's available now in with cloud or, ChatGPT or name the top five, what the capabilities of those models are, you could probably build it yourself. Right? So it's an arms race. Mm. And I'm worried for the common folks.
And it's really apparent that it doesn't, or it's not enough to have a human there to react to alerts like we did now for quite some time. You really have to automate this as well.
Yeah, and as well, automation is maybe not even the correct term. Mm-hmm. So there's a few things that are relevant. First of all, the speed of the attacks are going to move so quickly that humans just simply can't process at that speed. Automation is a known action based on an input that you know as well, right? So if this happens, then that. But what's going to happen is stuff's going to happen. We have no clue what happened, but we still need to respond. So you can't automate that. And that means that SOCs of yesterday, what they should have looked like, but for sure in the next 2 years, this will hit many organizations. They will be run by AI because they need to be able to process, triage, and respond at the same speed as the attack is going. So it's simply not possible as a human to do that. Absolutely not. So I'm convinced that on this journey, and just because I say that it needs to happen, that this is how I see the world, doesn't mean that people are going to do it. And that's my experience for the last 8 years, where I've been crying wolf, watch it. This is happening. I've seen this. I've touched it. It's coming. And then people look at you, it's not going to move so fast. But now it's here. And now I'm saying you need to go fully AI on your SOC. And the humans validate the AI, that they make the right decisions. Can we tweak and tune, right? I think it's going to need a lot of casualties of war before we as a whole industry are recognizing this as well. So in the next 2 years, I'm definitely expecting severe incidents. And we're going to be too late as an industry. We're going to adapt for sure, 100%. But I don't think it's going to be in time before big things happen. Sadly.
It's scary that you are scared. Also, it's scary for me because you know a lot. So is this a reason why you joined a company like Halcyon? Because you know this stuff since years. And how long is the footprint of Healthion, and what's your journey jumping on this mission?
So Healthion has a very specific focus, right? So to my knowledge, we're the only specific purpose built company that's fighting ransomware, specifically one industry, one threat factor. The difficulty with ransomware is that the threat factor moves across the whole board of the kill chain. It's not just a piece of malware that encrypts your machine. No, they got access to your machine. They did, you know, the privilege escalation, the lateral movement, moving from PC A to B to C, finding your document's intellectual property, collecting it, staging it, sending it out. And then, they start with all encryption stuff. Right, so it's the whole kill chain. Everything that could happen happens during a successful ransomware attack. And that's what Healthion is addressing from start to finish, because they've seen that this is an issue. There's no real countermeasures. It's EDRs there and XDR and all of those solutions. You absolutely need them. It's definitely a last line of defense. But the ransomware gangs have found a way to just simply disable those very quickly. There's packages out there called EDR killers, specifically designed to simply switch off your CrowdStrike or Sentinel or whatever. It's not that easy. Not everybody has access to it. But I can guarantee you that every successful ransomware attack has used some sort of it. So it's out there. And that means that whatever you have in terms of prevention failed. And the only answer to that is recover from a backup. And Healthion saw there's a gap there. We need to fill that. There needs to be an additional layer that doesn't fall for the same kind of exploits that an EDR would fall for. And it gives you resilience and gives you a capability of recovering from that without the need of recovering from a backup. Because even though it sounds safe, the average backup time after such an event is 22 days. Recovery from backup, 22 days. That's a lot of downtime. So that's kind of the angle of Healthion, why they felt that they needed to jump into this, especially because this industry just keeps growing. It doesn't get better, right? And I think it's one of the most destructive kind of attacks that you can have, because it just simply paralyzes an organization and their capability of producing and generating money. So it's a real threat with very little answers. And the answers that are relying on getting back up on your feet after something really bad happened to you, opposed to, can we still prevent this? So that's what we do. And I felt that I fit really well in there, because it goes from, the start to the end, and then, everything in between. It's also very interesting to see how creative these groups are. At how real that threat is, how much money is involved. What also many people don't realize is that years ago there was a big shift. There were like cocaine dealers, massive cocaine dealers, and they were making a shitload of money selling cocaine, right? And they sent 10 packages over the border, and if 4 would get through, it was a very good business opportunity for them. And then, hacking as a service, ransomware as a service came in, where, the return on investment case was much better. So we suddenly saw a group of people that were very scary, having a lot of money, starting to invest in this. This is not small-time people. These are huge cartels that are supporting this. So very scary. And I feel like, we have a job to do here. It's not just a few people that write some code and write you catch a note on your desktop. There's an industry behind this.
Well, so since when is Healthion in the market?
So about 5 years now.
5 years, okay.
Yeah, so it's a fresh company, founded in the US. The founders, already have experience in the Nation State Halls of Fame and several other companies. And they saw this hole, this gap in the market, and thought, like, we can do something about this. And that's kind of how it got started. Yeah. And so DACH, like I mentioned, we're in the second quarter here, so we're really fresh. Just over a year ago, We had first feet on the ground in EMEA, in UK and Ireland. So this is the second region, then there's Benelux and Nordics. And this is how we sort of start and get going. It's going really quickly because there is an issue that everybody has. We have a solution and it actually works. So
you said very quickly. Is it really from the market also quickly accepted what you say? Meaning that we see Europe in a different angle. We are slow. This is my sometimes experience. But as you said, there is no time for being slow in this issue. How are your customers or prospects are resonating with what you say in your clear words? Because it's not that you tell a story, you feel it. I feel that you feel, fuck, we have to do something.
I really mean that. I feel it in the bone, like I'm really worried. So I think I can make that clear to whoever I'm speaking to, but that's not even necessary, because how can you deny these large companies like Jaguar Land Rover being down on their knees, and you see them falling left and right? That is a reality and it's visible for everyone. So I don't have to convince them that's a possibility. It's a reality and everybody sees that. You know, in the last 6 months, almost every serious board member has to ask questions. Are we prepared for this? Do we need to adjust? I'm worried that this happens to us because they were well protected. What about us, right? So this lives within every organization. So yeah, I don't think it needs a lot of convincing. When I can then show a solution that works, and I can actually show you a real demo where I take down your EDR and then fill the gap, you know, it's very convincing.
But this is your demo. You take down EDR.
Take down an EDR within 10 seconds. You paid like millions for it. And it shows green in your dashboard. There's no clue that it's no longer there. So, you know, that's the reality of things. I have to say, like, you know, this kind of stuff is not available for everyone. But that's the reality of things. So when you see that happening, you're thinking, oh, now what? Because then suddenly that, you know, something goes wrong. I have backups story doesn't sound so good. Because the reality of that happening is much bigger than people anticipated before.
I hope you did not bring us a present.
No.
I think I should take another look at this USB stick I found outside.
It's not mine. But don't stick it in.
Yeah.
So what's your day-to-day life? So you said you are really traveling a lot, convincing, meaning you're building awareness. When you look to your monthly schedule, what are you doing a week, a month?
It's a bit diverse. There's still quite a lot of work from home, which is wonderful for me. I have a daughter, she's almost 16. She lives with me, it's the two of us here in Switzerland. When I can work from home, that's very good. I get to see my daughter a lot. When I have to travel, it's usually short travels, right? Fly in, fly out, or just one or two nights stay, so it's very manageable. But usually there's a lot of conferences speaking on that. I don't mind doing that. And usually the time after my speech is a bit more challenging because there's a lot of people wanting to talk to me or share, you know, what happened to them. Sometimes they tell things that they don't tell others because they know I know, but they don't want to share that with the neighbor, right? That this happened to me. It's almost like being caught naked out in the street. So there's a lot of that. I do a lot of consultant work, you know. So where are you at now? So what does your setup look like? Pinpoint like the top three things that you should be working on. You need to improve this, this, and this. There's a lot of that. A part of that, obviously, we try to evangelize the gospel of Halcyon because I don't do that because I work here. I do this because I believe in it. I see that this problem is there. Halcyon provides a really good solution that I see is working and I see the market needs. So I enjoy doing that. And the rest of the time, if I'm at home, I'm definitely still very geeky. You know, when I'm not either playing piano or walking the dog or, you know, riding motorcycle, doing something with my daughter, it's me building AIs, training AIs, working with AIs, seeing what I can make it do. There's a lot of that. Trying to keep up with the pace, at least, you know, in this world, everything moves so quickly. I'm getting close to 50 now, and that's, you know, a few times, a few years ago, I came to the point like, you know, maybe it's time to go into management, like full time, right? You know, I get to pace down a little bit, and then this whole AI hype hit, and I realized like, oh shit, I can't, I need to keep up, right? So we're going at it full time, and I think as long as you're in this industry, to any certain degree, you need to as well. It's super high pace. You never stop learning. You have to, you know, and now this whole new AI wave, and that's going to be another wave and another wave and keep you on your toes. But it's very dynamic. This profession is very dynamic.
Yeah, it feels like you are on a mission that it's sometimes it's not easy to do, but you have to do it.
Yeah, sometimes it's incredibly frustrating. Yeah. Right, especially if you see things coming because you know they are coming, right? Because you built them or you touched them or, you know, you mitigated them. And you tell people, like, you need to be careful. You need to start taking X, Y, Z into account. And then they just look at you and like, we'll see about that, you know. We'll look at it when it's there. Yeah, but when it's there, it's too late. And the most frustrating for me throughout this whole 30-year career is me seeing things that are definitely wrong, you need to address, and nobody doing anything about it.
I don't know if it's a good question, but what's the worst version of the future you see?
Oh, yeah. I don't want to scare anybody.
No, you started already, good, so you can continue.
That's not a good intro to it.
but I'm afraid I am going to. All right, so there's a few things going on in the world, apart from, you know, war here, left and right, and for whatever reason. But currently there's an arms race going on, right? Years ago, decades ago, it was the nuclear arms race. Now it's the battle of the AIs. Everybody is building the fastest, the smartest, the next, the new AI. And this is incredibly problematic because if you think about, right, so humans rule the earth. I don't think anybody would contend that. The reason we rule the earth, and it's not a lion or tiger or whatever, is because we are more intelligent than any animal on this planet. That's why we dominate. We're smarter. We're building something that is, and is going to be, way smarter than us. Now, look at AI, you know, anything that's super smart, but it's not physical, we still have some controls. But what if you combine it with the physical? And what I mean is, what if you combine these super smart AIs with robotics? So how many million is Elon Musk delivering this year? This is a very troublesome point. When you combine a physical with the intelligence, we just put a species on Earth that's smarter than us. What's going to happen? Now, you can play the roulette game and you can play on that number 74 black, you know, put all your money on that and that's the good outcome. But there's many, many more brackets it could fall into that don't look that good. We don't know how AI is going to respond. Right? And I've heard so many people say like, why wouldn't it like us? Or why would it be a bad outcome? Well, first of all, if you compare the logic from somebody that has average IQ with somebody with an IQ of 160, you see that the difference is so incredibly big. The two logics don't, you know, they collide. They think completely differently. Now imagine an AGI, you know, artificial general intelligence with an IQ over 200. You cannot imagine what it thinks. You cannot imagine what logic is to it. Maybe it decides like humans are bad for Earth. We need to extinguish that. Yeah, and then I heard people say like, why would it do that? Well, why wouldn't it? Yeah, but then it would die too. What do you mean? If it has nuclear power, it can survive for 10,000 years. It will wait us out. There's so many negative scenarios that can be possible. But in this arms race, what's happening, so we're talking about the military side. Everybody's trying to get on top. But the one that has the most advanced AI is going to win. And it's going to rule all of them. If the AI gets out, it will neutralize all the other threats. So when that happens, I don't know, 1984, in any variant of it, it's absolutely a possibility. It's not something we control. Training an AI is not a clear thing. The current guardrails of how to use AI, how to develop AI, they're so loose. They're so not definitive. Right, I'll give you an example. Let's firewall this particular AI. Let's firewall this shit out of it. TCP/IP protocol developed in, what, the 60s? There's so many possibilities to evade that. You know, as a nation state hacker, I've done it many times. How long do you think it takes an AI to figure out how to break through that stupid human-made firewall? I don't believe it. I don't believe that we can contain it. I believe we're going way too fast. I believe that the people that know this are aware of it, but don't have a choice to back down. Because Anthropic back down, Google back down, OpenAI back down. Okay, now let's move over to China. Let's have the discussion. Who do you think is going to cooperate? Nobody's going to do it because they all see the risk. So I'm very afraid of the future. It does not mean that we're going to end up in a doomsday, but it's definitely a possibility, and we don't control it.
I think I need a schnapps now.
No, before we take this schnapps, just imagine you have all the superpower in the world, all the tools, everything. What would you do?
Switch down electricity or what? No, kill all AI. Sounds horrible. I know how much good it brought. At the same time, it brought a lot of negative consequences. But if I would have the power, I would stop all AI, kill it. Let us, as humanity, grow up, become smart, figure it out, and only take up this project again if we know how to properly contain, guide it, give it guardrails. Because what we're doing now, it's stupid.
Okay, so all the superpower to Sebastian, and we search for schnapps. Cool.
Okay,
Christoph.
Maybe go a little bit back to Halcyon, because the name Halcyon actually is very contradictory to what you just described.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a tough bridge now.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, so I believe literally Halcyon means a period of tranquility and peace, right? So maybe peace before the storm, but it's depicting a period where things are peaceful and tranquil.
Peace before the storm? What?
Or silence before the storm, you know. It's referring to a state where we're feeling happy and everything's okay. And that's kind of the company name. But it definitely also came from, John Miller, the CEO, as I understood, an avid fan of the movie Hackers, right? And there's a theme song in the movie Hackers called Halcyon, which he also really liked. So what I understood from his conversation, I had one when I was onboarding, was where the name come from. So tranquil period of peace and quiet. And it's the song of his favorite movie. Yeah.
So this is where we're trying to get before everything crashes and burns. you're at the end point with Halcyon, right?
Yeah.
So this is your focus. With NetApp, we're in generality at the very center of where the data lies. There are also some protection mechanisms. How do you think this can be combined, or do you see a value in combining these two areas?
Yeah, so absolutely. First of all, like when we talk about ransomware protection, ransomware hits anything that has anything interesting, obviously. And when you talk about NetApp storage, there's going to be interesting stuff.
how do you get to it, right? If I'm an attacker, how do I get to a NetApp device? It's certainly the case that, you know, a hacker just jumps in right on the NetApp box. It's just, that's not how a hack works, right? So they need to infiltrate the organization. They will come into an endpoint, something that move laterally towards, right? So if we can hit the markers on all the endpoints with the Alcyon solution, before they get to the NetApp, that significantly reduces or actually almost annihilates the risk. But there's no such thing as having a full scope coverage within an organization, because most organizations don't even know their full scope. You know, still the question, like, do I have all assets with invisibility? Is it still a thing in 2026? So you definitely need protection on your NetApp as well. Right, so it's a combination. What I understood from our R&D environment is that we're actually working towards, you know, plugins for NetApp and other possible solutions, storage solutions, but also in the area of like ESXi, Hyper-V, anything in a virtualized or container-based environment. So we're working towards it, but we're still a fairly small company. We're just above 400 people globally. We can build it all at the same time, but definitely storage is on the roadmap. I don't expect it in the next couple of months, but it's we're looking at it. We're building something, and in the meantime, what we already can provide is the, you know, the gap coverage between the NetApp and the infiltrator comes through an endpoint that we cover the gap.
And for me, maybe the last question, we looked a little bit into the future, yeah, in the near future, in the hopefully very, very, very distant future. And we talked also about Mythos, which came quicker than we all thought, or you had it already on your horizon, but everybody else was quite taken aback by it. Another thing that also in the cybersecurity realm at the moment is now gaining a little bit of traction is post-quantum encryption. Wow.
Yeah.
Because this is the next hype, maybe, stuff, quantum, where we gain so much computing power that it will be possible to decrypt all the encryption mechanisms that are in place at the moment. How do you see this development? It's going to take us on another bad road.
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic. So first of all, that's a reality, right? So when quantum computing hits, what that literally means that anything with the encryption standards of today is basically plain text, right? So if you look at like secret services that for years have been packet capturing data traffic that was heavily encrypted and all of that, and they have no clue what's in it, but they know it's interesting. At that moment, it just became information in clear text, right? So, and that goes for many different angles. So post-quantum state is anything encrypted to current standards is plain text. There's several vendors that the industry is, you know, is aware of this. So, you know, there's adaptations to encryption algorithms that you see in different products. Like when I was just at Checkpoint, you know, still a year ago, we also had implementations for example, the VPN connections that were made ready for, you know, the post-quantum state. So you can definitely do something about it. But I don't think that the industry as a whole is ready to combat that. Because how powerful is quantum computing? It's just like asking, how smart is AI? I'm not sure yet. So it's going to be a very interesting state, because I think it will be a massive shift in privacy, but also a massive shift in exposed state secrets. Right, so it's going to be very interesting. But I'm not as afraid of that
as of,
yeah, of AI.
But do you have a, what is your time reference here? What do you think, when will this be relevant, or? I mean, it's relevant at the moment already, but when will quantum be at the stage?
So I think that quantum computer by itself, right, it's not a new thing. It's been built for decades. It's there, but there's very, very little that have access to it. So once this technology is made stable, because, you know, that's the key word, how do you make it stable? That's the biggest challenge at the moment. Then they have to make it consumer ready. And so the first step is, you know, the secret services governments will have access to like quantum computing state. But before it reached the commercial markets, if I have to give an estimation, we're at least 10 to 15 years out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because also what you need to build for that, right? It's like huge compute and there's super smart technology going into it. And if you now see this hype with AI, where all, you know, in NetApp, you can get hard drives and memory worldwide. There's a shortage of all of that. You know, all the energy and efforts is going into AI in these data centers. And it's kind of being taken away from this whole supercomputing state. But if you combine quantum computing with AI, maybe we should stop now. Yeah. No, but quantum computing, I think that's still quite a way out, at least for people like you and me to be able to touch it. And I'm not that worried about it.
Well, that's at least a little bit of more positive direction now, yeah. That were my questions. I think we're through now.
Yeah.
Thanks
for taking us on this road with these insights. A lot to do.
Yeah.
Maybe I should leave with a recommendation.
Yeah.
So when you listen to this, you're like, okay, what now? Right? I've said it many times, but the first thing, when you work with an organization, the first thing you need to do is get a board mandate. And what I mean by that, if you're not allowed to automatically respond from your SOC, how can you ever A, automate it, or B, have it AI driven? Most organizations don't have the mandate covered. So start that discussion, because that's what the industry needs. Secondly, go AI in your SOC. Don't have the attitude that says humans need to verify before the action gets taken. No, take the action, then verify after. Right. But first get the mandate. Without that, you can't do anything.
Und somit sind wir am Ende des heutigen Podcasts angelangt. Wir sagen danke. Schönen guten Morgen, guten Mittag oder schönen Abend, je nachdem, wo und wann ihr das Ganze heute anhört. Wir freuen uns schon, wenn ihr wieder bei der nächsten Folge dabei seid bei Datengeflüster.
Seid jetzt endlich fertig? Das war Datengeflüster für heute. Wir freuen uns über euer Feedback. Ihr habt Fragen oder Themenwünsche für zukünftige Folgen? Dann schreibt uns eine Mail an datengeflüster@quorum.at. Weitere Infos zur aktuellen Folge findet ihr unter den Shownotes und bei quorum.at. Datengeflüster, eine Produktion von Quorum und NetApp.